Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the all-new BIP Show, Season 5, Episode, I think it's 12, I don't care. Don't forget to hit subscribe, rate us wherever you get your podcasts. A reminder that all the financial information in this podcast is general in nature. Only speak to a professional advisor about your needs. Speaking of which, that's what I do. James Whelan, Investment Manager at VFS Group. Paul Colgan, I think his cab is stuck in traffic on the way back from the airport, on the way back from Davos. We wish him all the best to get here. When he gets here, I'm sure he'll be able to put in a good day's work. This episode is being recorded in Sydney. It is the 21st of September 2002 AD. The time is 10:15 AM Australian Eastern Standard Time. We will continue to remain unsponsored. We've got a new sponsor being lined up at the moment, which is fantastic. Looking forward to keeping the show going. Anyone else who wants to talk to us about that, please do so. Now, we were going to have a couple of guests today, but we Carl Siegling from Cadence Capital has actually got a little bit more of the long sickness that I think some people do. Not to talk his story, but he's just not in. He's still sharp as a tack, and the best fund manager that you could imagine in what he does. But he actually is not really able to talk as well as he probably could at the level that he needs to talk to be able to compete with me on this nonsense show. However, I am joined here, and we're going to get it's a very fortuitous event because it means we've got more time to talk about what you know, and I can pick your brain. Paolo Rojas, thank you, CEO of Synergy Resource Capital. Here in Sydney. She's a corporate advisor, investor, director, focused on metals, energy, tech, mainly in Australia and the Americas. Paola, how are you now?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
It's okay. Now, I ask the same question of all guests. What do you do and how do you make money?
Okay. So we look for opportunities in the battery metals, precious, and then base metal space, and a bit of tech. We can sometimes help them grow and either find assets, raise capital, or get exposure. And sometimes it means investing in these companies. You know, we're talking lots of juniors, so companies that are supposed to grow. So we do that as well. So it's a combination of managing our own money and having a bit of a select list of clients.
Okay, that's good enough for us of how that works, actually, because it's always good. That's the way that I sort of start things off with what you do and how do you make money, because it's easy to say investor, corporate advisor, things like that, but it's actually how do you physically, you know, what actually drives the business and what actually gets it done. Now, we did have a quick conversation before we started recording about your father. Now, first off, let's take a step back. The reason why I got in contact with you was because you put an amazing Twitter thread together, and I do love a good Twitter thread, and the last year has been famous for a few amazing Twitter threads. But your Twitter threads are incredible for anyone who wants to get better at what they do in the mining space and the resources space, or for someone who just wants to come into the game and actually learn what's going on in the space. So where did this knowledge come from that you have, which is obviously so deep, and it's a phenomenal knowledge.
Thank you for that.
No problem.
I think so I've been working in mining for about 17 years, so it's been some time. It started more in the exploration side, and that's where we're gonna go to the story that you're gonna ask me
in a second.
Because my family has been actually in the mining sector for at least four generations.
Wow.
Probably five. So it's something that, you know, comes with my lesson. So I don't know if you know, but in Latin America, you get both your lessons. So so I have two, but yeah. I use the first one, which is my dad's.
I didn't know that actually.
And yeah. So his family has been, you know, he was actually born in a little mining town in Chile. So, So it's a long story. It's you know, a very personal family story, the fact that I had that at home meant that I was always interested in learning. Like, my dad was a copper porphyry expert.
Yeah.
And so I learned the word, or I heard the word so many times before I even knew how to spell it, which is, you know, it's not a word that...
It's not one that amazes. It probably comes up in spelling bees all over the time.
Yeah.
So so that's a good grounding in that particular space. Now, look, you know that... I don't know if you know that I'm quite bullish on copper, regardless of what's going on.
Buying it on big dips.
Sometimes it does feel like I'm taking crazy pills, especially now that the price action isn't exactly reflecting.
It's insane. Yeah.
If only prices would move in the direction that I wanted them to, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be on a boat. But the so copper. Now I'm bullish on it, obviously, but the extent of my depth on it, I try and get quite short with the idea of just going for. For an EV car, and we've talked to Rob Rennie about this, head of commodity strategy at Westpac, when I said that a standard EV car takes three times as much copper as an internal combustion engine car, and he actually corrected me. I've told this story a few times. He corrected me and said that it's actually more like five times as much, because you're not taking into account all the charging stations and everything that you need to the charging stations as well. And that blew my mind. I could not possibly be more bullish copper at this particular time, except the price action is not showing it. How bullish should we be?
I think the long-term view is so bullish, and we should be so bullish long-term on copper, because this market is going to change in ways that we can't even comprehend today. It's going to grow so significantly because... You know, you were talking about how much copper, you know, the whole NEV needs, and then the key is in the infrastructure, like the amount of copper that we're going to need to be able to even use these EVs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to predict and forecast. So we're only taking a portion of that in the forecast that we're seeing. You know, BMO was forecasting something like, I think it was 35 million EVs for 2030.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a number, like, to get to that number, like, that's a lot. We need to do a lot. And at the same time, the other thing that is combined with that, not only we're going to need that, but currently, the pipeline for copper deposits is very thin.
Yeah.
So we, over the last, I think it's two decades. So before now, like currently, we're sort of averaging 1.6 discoveries per year. And it used to be 10. And searching for these deposits... He's so expensive because they're big, they're kind of deeper in the surface, so we need to drill more, we need to explore more, we need to invest a lot more than in comparison to, say, a silver or a copper mm-hmm. or a gold deposit.
Okay, yep.
So we have a thin pipeline. We need to put a lot more money, and for that to happen, we need to incentivize the miners with the price that makes sense to do all those things.
Yeah.
And Wood Mackenzie was putting that figure on 420, 426.
I haven't checked. Where is it right now?
Now it's 360.
Okay. That's all right. I can get up. It's okay. But So without worrying about immediate prices on this thing. So Wood Mackenzie had it at 420-ish to be able to make it profitable. worthwhile to
get? No. It's not that it doesn't make profit below. What I'm saying is that the incentive price to invest in the exploration, invest in the development to get to a point where you have a product.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that
$3.53 a pound too. I just pulled it up. There you go. Does that sound about right? Yeah. So it's still well under where it needs to be for it to be.
To incentivize a lot more exploration in comparison, think about the amount that we're going to need. Like, it's going to be so much more than we need today.
Hmm.
That price needs to keep climbing to incentivize that extra investment, because it's a risk. It's risk investment, obviously. You have... you have to go to, and sometimes you have to go to places where things are, jurisdictionally not as secure as, the Canada's and Australia's. It's very easy to do that here, but sometimes you have to go elsewhere.
Now, you did there's an amazing Twitter thread that you've done on porphyry deposits around the world. Do you want to go into that now and just sort of talk about what you can talk about in that particular sort of, where is the next big, or where is the next potential copper hit? Oh, if you could tell us that.
Look, we all have these sort of glasses that help us focus on the things that we really understand and we really care about. And you look at the global image and you see that ring of fire where, mm-hmm. The volcanic activity has been supportive of creating all of these copper deposits. So, and within that, like, you have, it goes around, it's a ring of fire that goes around. I think it's called the legal or technical name is Circumpacific Belt.
Okay.
So it goes around, the whole Andes and goes up and turns around up high in Alaska.
Yep.
And then comes down
through Japan and then through Papua New Guinea after sort of going to the left and then down over hangs a right and gets to New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't mean that...
I know that because I'm looking at a map right now. Sorry, guys.
So it doesn't mean that there's no deposits outside of that, but it means that that region is very, very conducive or there's a more high likelihood of having deposits there.
Yeah.
The Andes, for me, are amazing. And... we have a lot of beds over there and a lot of confidence in that region. And despite some issues like jurisdictional-wise that we mentioned, there's always issues somewhere in the world. There's always something happening.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the Andes is, and particularly the belt, and not only the belt, but the whole portion of the Andes where you go from Argentina and obviously share with Chile and Peru, that's very, very important. And the Canadian part of that belt as well.
Yeah, the top there. So what sort of grades do you need to be able to start hitting for it to be, well, I'm going to say worthwhile for copper grades?
Well, you want it to be above 20.25%, ideally, higher than that, but it has to be. And normally you'll find that you're going to see between 0.25 to 1%. That's, a good grade for a porphyry. So if you compare that to... say the copper that you get from a epithermal deposit. I'm not a geologist, by the way. I'm just interested in
this. Okay, okay, sure.
The grades in a gold deposit is going to be higher. We're talking different geologically. We're talking about from vein deposits that are higher grade to porphyries that are disseminated because they come from this magma, and then they migrate. The fluids migrate. This is really interesting. It's just amazing to look at think like a geologist, but with an investment or an investor perspective.
Yeah.
So when you understand how this thing, in a basic way, you don't have to be, you know, a super expert to have the concept in your mind to be able to think, okay, so if you have this magma and these fluids move around and then they precipitate, which means just get out of the fluid,
yeah,
and then they become a rock. They get, you know, become solid. That's where you find the metals. And that's why you find the specific texture of a metal. So when you understand these things, even in a basic level, when you're reading a news release, you're seeing a photo of a mining company, you can understand so much better and evaluate it so much better. And that helps your investment. So I, coming from my dad and understanding a lot of things that a lot of people don't have the, you know, chance to sit down with a copper porphyry expert. Yeah. Tell me about copper. Dad. And he would like, okay, let's go.
That would be something else.
Yeah. Oh, he was amazing.
Yeah.
But making that link between understanding these things as a bit of a history. I used to be super into history as well. I worked at in university where one of my subjects.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the reason why I am writing these things, because that's just having a better understanding of what makes sense and what should be there. You know, you're looking at a grade. Okay, so for this type of deposit, this grade is important, or this grade is uneconomic. So you can have that case where for a different type of deposit, a grade is just not economic. And if you know that, you save yourself the hassle of having invested in something that's never going to be.
So let's talk about some direct, you talk about the direct things, and please feel free. I mean, this is your job. This is what you do. What are some things that you're looking at the moment in Australia or abroad that might be worth taking investors' attention?
In terms of companies?
Yes. Feel free. That's why we're here.
As I said, we do a lot of, and again, this is, as you said, this is not financial advice.
Yes.
We do a lot of, a lot of work in Latin America still, and we have one company that we do still like a lot. It's a company called Chacana Copper. They're in Peru.
Yep.
The ticker is actually Peru.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Peru has been in trouble for about a year, or yeah, a bit more. So that hasn't been good. So, you know, it's that, you know, we were talking about these conflicts and these problems that, you know, the sector is having. So there's that uncertainty. But if you look at the long-term view, you know, eventually this is going to change. It's a political situation. Peru has a new government. Well, it's been in office for about a year, a bit more.
Yeah.
And they're not making it easy for investors, because there's a lot of uncertainty what's going to happen, and they're going to be, you know, restricting things and making it harder. So the situation in Peru is not ideal at the moment. But this deposit is stunning. The grades are amazing. Management is, you know, check. It was actually, it's a former BHP who was the CEO, who was a friend of my dad's. So I know him really well. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So that's one of our.
And that, yeah, the ticker is Peru. It's on Toronto on the Toronto, yeah, Stock Exchange. So yeah, if you can, yeah, get access to that.
Yeah.
But the general advice only, I mean, the situation, like you said, you mentioned on the situation in Peru, I believe Chile is going through a similar sort of situation with talking about constitutional reform, which actually failed.
But it's been voted down.
It's been voted down. So it is sort of going around. I'm trying to keep some sort of a finger on the pulse of what's going on over there with these situations that they are turning. But the reason why they're turning is a lot of it is because of their environmental protection. So that the irony that we need the copper because of the EV revolution, you can sort of see the way that the dog is eating its own tail in this one.
But I think at the same time, it's the best thing that could happen because I think this is making making the whole sector sort of popping up in mainstream media. And like you listen to Bloomberg, you listen to all these sort of general investment platforms, and they talk more and more and more about metals.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because I think everybody should have, like everybody, not just, you know, professionals, and everybody should have access to investment in these companies. I think, of course, you need to do your research. You need to devote some time. I think it would be great to have, there's a few funds that, funds that explore, invest in exploration, like Lowell and
what was that one, sorry? So
Lowell, that's ASX listed. Lowell Funds Management, I think is it.
That's not an account, sorry.
So that's one way, but I think there should be more investment funds. So funds that are, you know, open to the public. So they could, if they can, do the sort of
which is hard. We're going to get into that in a second too. So yeah, it's Lowell Funds Management, LRT. They're actually a listed company here as well. Resources Funds Management.
Yeah.
Amazingly, not one that I'd heard of myself, and I've been in this industry. I've been in this industry for almost two decades now, and it's not one that's ever come up.
From,
I'm always learning. That's the idea. Just hasn't come across. I'm seeing some big lithium pools out there. So that's very interesting. Now. That's copper. I think that there's three things that people have learned about. The average man on the street has learned about, or woman on the street, sorry, has learned about over the last. Thank you. That's probably better. I'm still getting used to this. The average person on the street is getting used to. One, I think everyone now understands how bonds work and bond yields work and how the overnight rate affects exactly what's going on, which they sort of already did, but people are now understanding exactly how important the 10-year Treasury yield is over in the States and how that actually impacts the rest of the world, which is fantastic. And people now actually, they understand because they've been told enough times that yields and bond prices do move inversely. The other thing that people have learned about is metals and what actually goes into their car and what goes into their new car and how much of it they actually need to go into their new car. The other thing that people have learned about, especially really recently, is where their energy comes from, and that's a big one. That's a big one as well.
Yes.
So, well, I don't want to go down the path of talking about uranium, unless you do. Let's not go down that path. So you give me the look. Unless you do, do you want to talk about uranium?
Look,
if you've got some good uranium ideas.
Look, I think what I can say, I'm still bullish on uranium long term.
Yep.
The price. A bit similar to copper. It doesn't make a lot of sense today. It's recovered a bit, but I did some work over a decade ago. We were exploring. We had a client back then that was exploring for uranium in Argentina, so I have some experience in the exploration side. I have a lot of in my network, a lot of people interested in investing in uranium. I think long term, and because of what's happening in Europe, this is pushing sort of like, okay, maybe we need to reassess the fact that we're saying that uranium is not good for the environment. And I think the energy density that uranium brings is really significant. And when you look at the story of energy, and I saw a thread that put it so brilliantly, Every time there's an upgrade in energy, you go to higher density form.
Yep.
So why are they thinking about going back to burning wood? Like, oh, yeah, because it's sustainable, because we can.
Now, lithium. Okay, that's pretty cool. Now, with copper, you often find that there's gold holdings with gold. Now, I've been very interested in silver for a long time and playing the silver game. I noticed that Sentiment Trader put something up at the beginning of the month that I actually managed to miss because I just when you miss it, you miss it. And I talked about it at the time, but I never put a trade on because I'm a goose. This is the beginning of the month. For the third time in history, commercial hedges are holding a net long position in silver futures. Now, the other two times that that's ever happened in history, silver rallied 20%. After that, the SLV Trust, the trades over on the ARCA exchange in the States, which is usually how I would trade this, did actually rally quite significantly from that time. So it's a pretty good point. Have you got any good silver names that you'd like to that are worth a good mention?
Yes, we actually were very bullish silver long term, despite some of the issues that the metal tends to have. But one of the most exciting stories that we've been involved in and we honestly really believe in is a company called Avra Silver that listed in the TSXV exchange, and the ticker is Avra.
A-B-R-A. Avra, got it, yeah.
They have silver gold deposit with a potentially a big copper thingy underneath, but that's potentially as
yeah,
I said.
Yeah,
But the focus here is the silver and the gold. They have currently 90 million ounces of silver and 1 million ounces of gold. The company has been drilling constantly in the past few months. The key catalyst coming up is, well, there's two. The resource update, which is going to be significant, is coming in October.
Yep.
So we're going to see, higher values, and it's going to be very, very, it's looking very good.
It's okay. Keep on going.
Yeah, and the second one is the PFS that is coming. So the pre-feasibility study coming probably the beginning of next year, and coming from the previous PA, which was already positive, but with these higher grade zones, higher, more resources, it's going to be a very significant uplift. So. And the volume is rising, so people are taking notice, and the last few intercepts have been super impressive.
Excellent. Okay, that's great. So I'm just looking at here at the last announcement a couple of days ago on phase two drill results. 38.5 metres at 183 grams per tonne, which equivalates to, 2.6 grams a tonne. I'm just looking at here. Anyway, that's just the last announcement from the other day.
Yeah, that's the last one, yeah.
It's worth checking out. That one there, Avra. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, let's talk about lithium. Let's go straight to that. What do you see in the lithium space? Is this run done?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't think so. In terms of price, I don't think we're going to see any dramatic changes. If you compare to last year, it was, big jump. Several times, three times? I lost track, but
I didn't catch it at all for some reason. Once you miss it, I can't get on that bus.
We started investing in lithium in 2008. Actually, the first investment we ever did was uranium, but the second one was lithium, and It was kind of a like an epiphany when I discovered lithium. I didn't know much about it really, and this was 2008, and still back in Argentina, and we got a new client who had some tenements, and we were as I was explain before. I don't know if we recorded that, but we were managing back in Argentina with my previous company. We were managing exploration companies that wanted to operate in the country. So I was sort of seeing lithium for the first time. I was used to copper, silver, gold, all these hard metals, and lithium was completely new. And in Argentina, it's mostly found in brine. So it's more of a chemical search, if you will. Like, you're still looking for salt lakes, salas, that we call them there. Anyway, I get back to what you asked. The epiphany. So when that came, okay, and I was kind of used to people complaining a lot about mining in Argentina. So Argentina is not a very mature mining jurisdiction. It's emerging. It's still, you know, there's mines operating. There's silver, gold, lithium, and a few other things being produced. So it's there, but it's still small. If you compare it to Australia, like, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
Like, this is a mining town.
Yeah.
Town, country.
No, we're a mining town. It's okay.
No, just say that.
This city is a mining town, and people invest in other mining towns. It's okay.
In Canada as well, you know, and my two places have always been, like, it's been Canada, Australia, and so going back in Latin America, there's a lot of social resistance in general, not everywhere, but in some places, to mining, because some countries don't understand it. Chile is more mature, Peru is more mature, but Argentina, and to some degree other, Colombia and Brazil a bit. So there's a lot of social license work that needs to be done still. Mm-hmm. But when we started working with lithium, starting to, and this was 08, so I saw the nugget of, oh, okay, so people are gonna not necessarily not be against, like, completely, but they're gonna find it much harder to be against this, because it's gonna go into their EVs, it's gonna go into batteries, and you have your phone, like, you know your phone, you understand that your phone, even if you don't know a lot about mining, you know that your phone has metals.
Yeah.
And you know that your phone has a lithium ion.
It's when you got your laptop, it says it's a lithium battery in the back. Your car doesn't say it's a copper, you know, it's copper running through the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's more of an awareness that there is that what's in the product that you use.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even back then I thought, oh, this is the way, this is the thread that we need to pull, because there's gonna be a lower resistance.
Mm.
And we're seeing that today, that, you know, it's mainstream in a way. You have, you know, a lot of discussion in the, as we were talking before. So I think, and if you compare lithium as a market to copper as a market and to oil as a market, so you see my hands move, like, lithium is a little portion of a market.
Yep.
And then you go into a bigger portion, which is copper, and then you go to a bigger one, which is oil. Mm-hmm. So the run, it's a big run, and I mean, it will be, that's what I think. In terms of pricing, I think we're gonna see more of a bit of stability in the price. I don't see it moving like it did. I don't see anything dramatic, but we're gonna need to keep putting these projects in production, because in general the amount of time or the years, the period of time that you need from finding a deposit to actually being producing, it takes even 5, 6, 7 years. So even if you're finding something today, you're not going to have the production so quickly as it could be with other metals that are easier, especially if you're using brine. So brine, I like brine because it's easier to find, because you have a big clue. Like, it's a little bit simplistic, but in an empiric way it works, if you have a salt lake, in a region that tends to have these deposits, you have a very, very big indication that it could be. Of course, you have to make sure that the aquifer underneath actually has relevant or enough of a in terms of the component or the content of lithium in the brine has to be enough, and there's a threshold, and if you have above 500 milligrams per liter, but there's option, there's cases where you have less and you can use resins or you can use direct lithium extraction. So there's other options.
Yep.
But it's a process that takes a lot of tweaking, and there's a lot of new technologies. DLE is not a, long-term existing technology. It's relatively new. I think there's a lot of challenges. It's a sector that's going to keep growing. I don't see the price growing so much. I see a lot of lithium explorers that started, let's say, 5 years ago are now getting to the time, they're either in production or about to be in production, and that's going to sort of...
Any good names that you've got in that space that you'd like to
talk
about?
We like Lithium Americas. We've been there since 2017 through an acquisition. They actually acquired... former clients of ours, and that was called Millennial Lithium. So we got to stay because the acquisition was all shares, thankfully. We like Sayona from ASX listed.
So Lithium Americas is LAC. I've got here is the stock price in Toronto.
Yeah.
I can trade in Toronto, so it's that does mean that I get the advantage here. That's why I don't care if it's ASX or if it's not. So what was the one in Australia?
Sayona.
Sayona.
S-Y-A.
Yeah. And that stock code for that one is... we've got it here. Really, so that's S-Y-A. Yeah. I remember that. Everyone's talked about that.
Yeah.
You see how far separated I am from this space now, can't you? Single stock names in the mining sector, just so far away. Well, what's good about Sayona?
Sayona has a group. Well, they started with a project in Canada. They have a project in Quebec.
Mm.
And then they did a deal with Piedmont Lithium and acquired some complementary assets. So now it's like a hub, really. So the plan, I think, is production next year. So they've just been admitted to the ASX 200.
No, that's I didn't see it come up on the list. That's brilliant.
Yeah, there were clients as well a few years ago, and we've been holding since then in across a few of our portfolios. And I think we started buying at 1 cent. That's the thing, in these companies, you do have to do the work. Or invest an amount that, if you can't afford to lose it, because sometimes things go wrong.
That's absolutely true. And the risk of these ones, you can see that there's more. I mean, provided you've actually got a holding and management that are completely incompetent, you can't see that lithium and copper and even uranium to a certain extent. There's not as much downside as there used to be looking into these things. So,
as you said, I've developed... I think the key is to make sure there's no, those really bad red flags.
Yeah.
So I developed a tool to actually just, make it really, really systematic and objective.
Yeah.
So if this, okay, no, there's no way, I'll put it... I think I'm going to be able to put it for people to use as well.
That's right. We might make a link to that. So I'm going to wrap it up now because we're almost all out of time. How can people get in touch with you to find out more about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so our website is synergyresourcecapital.com.
Yep.
And we have, all the stuff we do and bunch of resources as well. There's a blog. I have a blog because sometimes I have to write more than what I can on Twitter. So it's Paula Rojas, that blog. And the main, if you want to see, you know, more constant things and sort of coming on and joining us as an investor in natural resources, because I think, as I said, everybody should come on Twitter, Paula _ Rojas,
yep.
Rojas.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the best way to find me.
Thank you very much. So we'll put a few links to some other tweet threads that you've done and also to the blog too, so that people can actually check out what you've written and learn. It's good for people who are looking to go sort of take that next level in their learning and their knowledge, or people who are looking to start off as well. There's some really good one-on-ones that you've written in there as well.
Thank you.
Look, I'm going to wrap it up there, Paola. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You can find us on iTunes at The Bip Show or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter. You know where we are. I've got a website, which is where I'm going to put all this stuff. Google Whelan Capital. That's where I keep that. That's not anything to do with VFS. It's just a place because you need somewhere to hold all your stuff. I'm on Twitter as well at JamesWhelan42. The show is produced by me. It's just me doing it. We'll catch you next time. Thank you so much for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.